It's another episode of Give Us the Launch Codes. We're having another fun cinema conversation, aren't we?
Yeah, we're taking a break from the bad things of real life. We're going to talk about movies.
And before we get into it, I thought of a fun thing, because we watched, you watched one of these at the theaters, and then we both watched the other one at home, and I watched Superman at home. Yeah. And I know you watched Superman.
Yeah. Three times in theaters, and then I watched it again last night.
So, both are on HBO Max now, which is interesting. Both these movies, Superman and Minecraft, are on HBO Max now.
They're both Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
They're both
but
Warner Brothers
before
movies.
We dive into this conversation of these two movies that came out for this year, what was the last movie you've seen before? So what's the last rewatch you've done recently?
That's not Superman that I did last night.
Does it count if I didn't finish the movie?
I didn't finish it either,
rewatch.
But we watched it so many times, it was just part. Well, that's naturally rewatching.
Two nights ago, I just, while my wife is in the shower, I wanted to kill some time. I started rewatching the first Terminator.
Dude! Okay.
I didn't finish it, sadly. I stopped it because my wife got out of the shower. And I don't think she wanted to watch it with me. I got it right as the tech noir shootout was about to begin.
That's my favorite part with the tech one, because he brings out that big deagle with the scope with the laser dot on it, huh? Yeah, it was first the Uzi, then he rips out the scope with the
I fucking love Terminator. I love Terminator 1 and 2. My favorite duology of movies, because that's what it is. There are only two movies. None of those movies existed.
Don't you love how the first one's filmed like a horror film, and the second one is just straight up action?
I know that's such like a James Cameron staple, where the sequel is much more action packed. Even though it kind of reminds me of Alien and Aliens, even though he didn't direct the first Alien. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That first movie is basically like Halloween with a time travel shtick. Like the Terminator is just Michael Myers as a gunslinging robot. And Sarah Connor is just
there's even a sex scene, like most slasher films. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's
there's a sex scene that results in the sex partners.
Actually, there's two sex
murked.
Scenes but whoever has sex dies.
Well, except for the final girl. Yeah. Oh yeah, the final girl is not a virgin in that movie, technically. Of course, we don't actually know if she was a virgin at the start of the
movie. Both those movies are good. I like the third one just for the scope of more like the apocalypse thing of like the end of the world with AI. And then Salvation should have been amazing, but it went to shit. You have Christian Bale and you shit on it is beyond me. And the series franchise has gone to hell. Really, it has. So the first two movies, folks, are flawless. It's almost like The Godfather. Just watch the first two.
Yeah, here's why I've never watched anything after 2. It's because
you did it, right?
They stopped Judgment Day. That's the amazing thing about that movie is like it's like you think it's just the first movie again, but this time they have a Terminator helping them to stop a more powerful Terminator. But James Cameron is one of the smartest filmmakers alive. He knew that like it can't just be we got to kill the Terminator. We have to raise the stakes and stop the entire robo-apocalypse from happening. And they do, which is why I can't watch any of their movies, because they automatically ruin T2 by default. It's like, oh, never mind, Judgment Day's still happening. Well, what's the point of Terminator 2, then? What was the whole point of that?
Destiny. It's really the third one, Destiny.
Destiny is what you make. No fate but what you make. The future is not set. That's why I love T2, and every other movie shits on that. In my opinion, if they're to ever make another Terminator movie, the only hope they have of doing it right, go full remake. Hit the reset button, recast all the actors, set it in modern times. You know, you could do, I mean, I don't actually want them to remake Terminator, but if someone ever dares to make another one, just remake it. Just do it over again. You don't have to worry about, and don't do the stupid like, oh, well, we time traveled again and changed the past again. No. Different universe. Just completely
alt universe.
Why not
just a prologue that shows the battle war and leads up to, the time travel?
Because thanks to T2, true. None of that happened.
You're like, damn it, T2 is perfect.
T2 is a perfect sequel, and the very nature of that ending is like it ends with such a finality that a lot of like sequels don't. Like even Return of the Jedi, like you still, when you watch Return of the Jedi, it ends, and but you can't help but wonder, okay, what is Luke Skywalker gonna do to rebuild the Jedi? How are they gonna fix the galaxy? And then you watch the sequels, and well, it turns out they did a really bad job at it. But you do left with some lingering
questions.
Read the
books, they're actually better. But I do like what you said, because T2 actually perfect that for a movie. T2 ends with just literally, you're literally watching the asphalt, the driveway, the road.
Yeah.
And that's such a crazy shot for when you think about that movie. That's a crazy shot.
The future is a mystery now. And it's comforting to know that it's a mystery. It's open-ended, and you don't know what it's going to happen next, and it feels good. In a way that a lot of movies that end like that don't. It leaves you with a lot of questions and haunting feelings. But no, when T2 does it, it's like you feel relief. And I don't need to know what happens to Sarah Connor and John Connor after that. I just know.
Do
that
you want to know what
okay.
I recently rewatched? Didn't actually finish it either, but I rewatched it. And I've seen it, you know, God knows hundreds of times. It's part like just wow. I'll give you a hint. Mm-hmm. Ready? It's there's a big band number. Let me just say that part. All right, you ready? Don't know. You ready? Hoodoo day, doodoo chicky pow pow, doodoo chicky pow pow, doodoo yo, yo. Ah, yeah.
That didn't happen.
That was some George Lucas.
That was some George Lucas bullshit.
I love that scene, though. That's my favorite part of Return of the Jedi.
It's not what that song was supposed to be.
It's not what that song was supposed to be.
Do you know why I love that?
Because that alien singing that. I will die on this hill. I think that's like basically a little homage to Joe Cocker. Think about it. Think about the facial hair, the way that alien's moving his hand. That's Joe Cocker. I love that. I know it's a little bit of a James Brown feel, obviously, because the nah, 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 and then that girl comes on with her backup singers and she.
Yeah.
I love Return of the.
So now I know why you gave me that look when I referenced Return of the Jedi.
You said, okay. I was like, oh shit, he knows already.
He knows already.
I really didn't.
But come on, that was awesome. First of all, the OG trilogy as a whole is great. It really is. Afterwards, I think the prequel trilogy is fine. Honestly, I think it holds on its own still to this day. I kind of like what you said when we were doing the Sinners episode. That third one aged. Revenge of the Sith aged too well.
It aged better than it should have. Because I still don't think Revenge of the Sith is
Rogue
a great
One's
movie,
phenomenal. But honestly, the OG trilogy is great. I love Return of the Jedi because it's just... It's a great... I mean, yeah, like you said, it... It ends with, like, okay, what happens next? You have to rebuild the Republic. You defeated the Empire twice. Are there remnants? What happened? You know, looks like there's peace. You're partying with the Ewoks, all that shit. You mean the super? You saw the Super Star Destroyer blow up. It's like, okay, you won. What next? Obviously, there's so many books, but Return of the Jedi is just a fun, like, I think, romp. Because you go, you're like, you're in the desert to Dagobah. All of a sudden, you're in the forest. You got, like, you know, the big moment with Vader and Luke. And what a great line, you know. I am a Jedi, like my father before me. So be it. Jedi. And then the Force lightning. Like, that, you, the first time ever seeing Force lightning.
Which I mean, okay, yeah. And the thing about, like, the Emperor before any of the prequel shit... is like he is just simply an embodiment of evil.
Yeah.
I think that George Lucas compared him to Satan. He's just Satan incarnate. And like, why can he do Force lightning? Because he's just evil. There was nothing. There's no bullshit about like, well, you know, if you follow the dark side and you achieve a level 12 Force power, like then you can master the power of Force light. No. He's just evil. That's why he's
doing
that.
First time as a kid, I probably watched that when I was, what, 3 or 4? And yeah, my dad had the VHS special edition, so you were like this, oh, that singing didn't happen. I'm like, no, that singing happened. I love that musical number. I don't know why. It's one of my favorite movie songs. Obviously, as a young boy, too, like, you know, being 4, seeing the Leia in the bikini, metal bikini outfit, my God, that awoken everything in me. I'm like, yeah, I like girls. I really like girls.
something. This has got to say something about me. I feel like, because I don't think Leia in the Beginning didn't do that for me. What did do it for me was Seven of Nine and that, Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, you know what she wore.
Wasn't
on that
she
show,
in the
right?
suit? Right,
the
she's a big, like, skin-tight cat suit. Skin-tight catsuit. That where the first one she had actually made her suffocate.
Travis, all that says is I like BDSM and you like leather. That's awesome. That's all it is. All right, let's jump into this. So we thought we'd have a fun episode, like Travis said, just take a break from just basically the interviews we've been having out and also the news. We thought we'd talk about some movies, two movies that came out this year that are big, well-known.
You wanted to talk about two movies. I just wanted to talk about Superman. But you forced me to said, all right, in order to talk about Superman, you're going to have to watch Minecraft. And so I did. I watched a Minecraft movie. And I have to ask you, Tom, is this revenge for the time that I took you to see the Hurricane Heist in theaters?
Look that up.
Look that movie up. Look up the Hurricane Heist from the director of the first Fast and Furious movie. That, I shit you not, that was released in theaters. That was not a Sci-Fi Channel original movie.
I mean, you know what? I feel like subconsciously it might have been a little revenge, but really to me I'm like this, okay, if we're gonna do Superman, let's have fun, let's talk about Minecraft only because this is the $1 billion movie.
Yes, it's it did make a billion dollar movie.
And my son wanted to watch it because I was at home and it was on HBO Max. And I'm like, let's watch a movie. He's like, okay. He's like, oh, what's that? And the poster displays you see on HBO Max, it's just a fun, colorful display.
Has he ever played Minecraft?
But we're going to might get it for him for Christmas. We might, because I have the PS4. But he pointed at it. I'm like, you know what? Fine. I like Jack Black. I think Jason Momoa is a good actor. Like, yes. The TV shows he's done, like, was it C on Apple? Yeah. And the
Stargate Atlantis.
What was
Atlantis.
The one on Netflix? Frontier or whatever, I think it's called. But I'm saying, he has the chops. He's a force of nature, I think, as an actor. And I think he's a great Aquaman. Oh, yeah. He was just in shitty films. So I'm like, you know what? Let's watch it. I should have fun. And that one chick from Peacemaker and the Orange is the New Black's in it. I forget her name. I like her as an actress. So I'm like, okay, let's watch it. Do it. Trust me, I'm with you. Oh, fuck, man. Fuck, that's a bad movie.
I was trying to put into words, like, describing it. Because I was having a hard time paying attention. Because just nothing was working for me. And I came up with this. It was like someone trying to do a live-action episode of South Park.
Yeah, I kind of feel that.
Where the characters are not really fully developed characters. They're more like parodies of character types. And everything is cartoony. Everything is like irony-pilled and insincere. Which means there's nothing actually grounding you to anything that's happening. Like, you don't actually care about the fate of characters or the world that they're in.
Let alone the fate of that world.
Even when Jack Black first starts talking, I thought he was doing, like, an impersonation of Trey Parker and Matt Stone's voice acting. this over-the-top delivery that doesn't sound like he actually means it. It's like, that's how the adults in South Park talk. And partly because they're, like, all voiced by the same two dudes. And at least, like, first of all, in South Park, everything's animated, which means the jokes work better. It's like this movie is actually less funny because it's live action. Also, with the irony and insincerity, on South Park, there are actual jokes and satire that make it tolerable, as well as just edgy humor because it's made for adults. And a South Park episode's only 22 minutes long, whereas this is like 90 minutes. But one part that every time this came up, I wanted to turn down the volume on my TV and just watch it on subtitles and mute because I didn't want to hear it. Is when General Chungus showed up. See, I did remember things from the movie, even though I was like half.
What a weird voice, too.
Yeah, you think he's the secondary antagonist. He's very orc coded. All like the pig guys are very orc coded.
Do you want to know what I thought his voice would be? The main brute from Halo 2.
Was that Kevin Michael Richardson?
I think that was. I literally thought that was going to be his voice because I'm like, because he does a like, you know what I mean?
But then he's just talking like this. Like, he doesn't care about being there. And
hey, bud, I'm sorry I got to like unalive you.
Oh, God, that line. Yeah, yeah. And I thought, and it just, okay. Nobody is taking this seriously in like a bad way.
Not even like the, and it's not like the characters, like even the writers, like no one top to bottom of this production.
No one cared. Well, I don't want to say no one cared. It's just that no one thought the kids would care.
Yeah.
And therefore, why should I care? It's like, you know, I like maybe I would be more motivated if, like, literally, I would care slightly more if the pigs sounded genuinely evil, if they all had, like, orc Darth Vader voices.
Or like a second-in-command warlord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if they kept the same dialogue, like the unalive line, that would sound a little bit funnier.
If it was Kevin Michael Richardson?
If it was like,
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to unalive you.
Like, that would be funnier than his the stupid voice that he did.
Don't you wish all the pigs had the Uruk-hai voices? What is it? What is it? What do you smell? Man flesh. They picked up our trail.
Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys.
See, looks like meat's back on the menu is so much funnier. Even though, like, the orcs are scary in that, in the Lord of the Rings movies, but
the scariest things in the whole trilogy.
But, like, that line looks like that's funnier than anything in the Minecraft movie. And it never takes you out. Even though the line literally doesn't make any sense. Like, back on the menu. Like, why would he say that?
Isengard has a great, great restaurant. It's a Michelin star restaurant. They have brunch on Sundays, mimosas. Isengard is classier than Mordor.
The one part of the movie, the one part of a Minecraft movie that made me laugh, the only laugh it got out of me. I don't know why this made me laugh as hard. Maybe I'll credit the editor with this. It was just like perfect timing. It's where Jack Black takes all the displaced characters to the village that he built, I guess. And he's like, you gotta try this chicken, this lava cooked chicken. And so you see a dispenser where, like, this Minecraftified chicken. So, you know, just, it barely looks, it looks more like a duck than an actual chicken.
That's the joke of Minecraft in the game, yeah.
Cartoony and unrealistic as possible. Drops into a dispenser and there's like a compartment of lava overhead. And then the doors open, the lava dips down right as it's about to cook this chicken, right as about the lava touches down. It cuts away from that to Adebayo from Peacemaker's face going, "Ugh!" And that made me laugh because I legit was not expecting that cutaway because it was, I just thought, oh, like we're actually gonna see a cartoon chicken get roasted alive in lava.
Why not?
Because it was so cartoony and I was like, there's no way this could actually be upsetting for children, but they cut away from it like it would be. And that made me laugh for some reason. It made me laugh more than any of the actual attempts in humor in the movie.
La 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 lava, chicken. Steve's lava chicken.
Gonna... I fucking hated
all the singing.
I hated Jack Black, which is a crime.
Did it sound like the voice he was doing was basically from the old that? Oh god, I think late 90s, early 2000s video game, Crazy Taxi.
Yes, it did sound like he was doing that. It sounded like Jack Black didn't know what to make of the character he was playing, so he just, like, hammed it up. I'm gonna be as goofy as possible without any, like, real motivation to be that way. Because it didn't have like the prologue
is long.
It's long and stupid as fuck. Just the whole like as a kid, I wanted to be in the mines. Why? Like you are not like there's nothing about this kid where I'm like, I can relate to that as a kid. No, it's like, this is not a real child. And it's like, it's almost like the joke is to just use the children yearn for the mines language. And that's it. That's all, like, that's all they had. And again, it's like, if this was a sequence in South Park, that would be fine. because the whole thing is just a joke anyway, and you're not taking it any bit seriously.
Blockbuster film.
But this is a blockbuster film with live-action actors.
Well-known live-action.
Living in a cartoon live-action world, and then going into the Minecraft world, which is even more cartoony. But it never feels like there's actually a stark contrast between going to the Minecraft world and going to the real world.
Remember that line even Jason Momoa says? I think I know where we are. This looks like Wyoming. I'm like, what the f... Yeah, he actually said that. Yeah, he said this looks like Wyoming. I'm like, what are you talking about? The fuck?
Again, it's like, is that a joke?
The movie takes place in Idaho. I don't know if that's a joke for Idahoans. You know this takes place in Idaho.
That explains the potatoes. Okay.
Well, also to the director, Jared Hess, that's Napoleon Dynamite, Nacho Libre. Napoleon Dynamite's in Idaho.
Yeah.
That Jack Black, Nacho Libre, that's the only reason why.
Napoleon Dynamite, that's a good movie.
It's a but even Nacho Libre, both those movies are phenomenal, which is crazy to think of. And you know what's funny? I like how you brought the real world, how dumb the real world is. Like, I love Jennifer Coolidge. I do like her when she's in movies. But
not
wow.
In this movie.
Dude, like, oh yeah, my ex-husband and I just stayed together for the dogs. Oh, you the garbage man? You can take my garbage out any day. Just be careful. Raccoons might fall out. I'm like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of just like random dialogue.
Oh, the teacher? Yep, I'm living by a thread here. Put a lot of money into vending machines. I'm like, yeah, I had to watch it with my dad. He's like, what fucking teacher says this shit?
Well, that just goes to my point. It's like the real world doesn't feel real. So therefore, it's not that special, you know, contrast. Like compared to like Wizard of Oz. Like, the Wizard of Oz. Everything is black and white. You can kind of buy that like Dorothy is a real girl on a real farm. And her dog is like, she is living in a real world. And then she goes to Oz. And it's colorful. It's oh god, they filmed it in color for the first time. This is amazing, and nothing looks real. There is a like the contrast could not be more stark. But you know, nobody was thinking that everybody just assumed by the time they go to Minecraft the contrast will be apparent, but they really isn't.
No, but both worlds are actually very colorful and like not just color palette wise, like costume wise too. Like everyone's wearing ridiculous outfits in the real world. Like that pink leather jacket Jason Momoa had. Or was it denim. But I'm like, everyone's like over the top. Everything is over the top in the real world. Yeah. Is that just Idaho, maybe? Maybe that is Idaho.
Well, that's I would consider it disrespectful to Idaho. Well, it's like, no, there's no, like, okay, if you can have humor in the real world, but make it like kind of like dry.
Like Napoleon Dynamite was?
Like where you, exactly, yes. Where you could watch it and go like, okay, I know a person like this. I know people that are like this. But just like the teacher saying, I am your teacher. I'm going on really hard times right now. And it's just like, here is my backstory unfolded in 5 sentences. Even though you will never see my character again. I'm like, fuck you. It felt like a studio mandate being like, this scene has to be funny. It's a, you know, it's like what Riddler Media talked about with the 2016 Ghostbusters, where it feels like there was a continuous pressure for like there has to be a joke every 5 seconds, but or just something funny and off kilter, instead of like, you know, nothing is played straight, and therefore you have this like detachment from reality, like, oh, if nothing's played straight, then there's no stakes. These people aren't real. I don't actually care about their well-being. If it wasn't for this fucking episode, I would have turned that movie off very quickly. I would have turned that movie off. I would have found something to watch. I'll tell you what I did with Tom as I was watching the movie. I shared with him a scene from Mary Poppins where Mary Poppins is singing the song Feed the Birds. Because my mind started wandering and thinking of like, what's a good example of a live-action kids movie? And I'll tell you this. I watched Mary Poppins as a kid. Feed the Birds always put a tear in my eye. There is something like... something a little hopeful, but there's also something very sad about that song. And if it's not the scene where she sings it, it's the scene later where the instrumental orchestra of that song reprises when Mr. Banks is walking to the bank to get fired. Because and that always broke my heart watching that, because it's like, well, first of all, you finally found a reason to sympathize with the dad. You realize he in his mind is trying to be a good father. He's not being an asshole. He's trying to make the world. And I'm sure I don't know if you've seen Mary Poppins since you've had your kids, but I feel like you could appreciate
it. Oh, well, I've seen it twice. I'm not with the kids yet. I think we have it somewhere on Blu-ray. If not, hey, Disney Plus. But it's a good film, and
it's kind of amazing because you realize, oh, Mr. Banks is secretly the protagonist because he's the one that has the actual arc of kind of learning to appreciate his kids, and that, you know, just being a hard worker in his job
isn't enough
in terms of being a good father. And then like that moment is dark because he's walking in the middle of the night, dead in the night, no one is around, everyone's asleep, it's completely empty, you have these beautiful matte paintings, and
you showed me the picture, the clip, yeah,
yeah, and everything, and the music is swelling like da 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 da, and you just know, like, he feels like a failure, he feels like he's failed his family. I don't know if he'll actually survive the night. You don't know if, like, he'll jump off a bridge afterwards. Like, he just, you know, he realizes, like, you know, it's sad. It's like he thinks his life is over.
The nice part about what you're saying, just now we're talking about Mary Poppins here, about him being the actual protagonist, is being a hardworking, let's just focus on the father part. Being a hardworking father isn't enough, because you still need to bond and sit down with your kids no matter how long you're working and how much money you're bringing in. But the only way for your children to understand why, where's dad? Why is he always working? Just sit down and tell your kids, hey, you're going to see me tired. You're going to see me hurting, and you're not going to see much of me. And I'm only doing this so you won't have to do what I'm doing. I'm working hard. So all this stuff around you, the heat, the clothes, the toys, the food, the roof, will forever be around you for the rest of your lives. Yeah. And now all you have to do as a parent is just, as a father specifically, just sit down. And if you can tell your kid that at least once, twice, like my dad sat me down when he was doing all this OT and he was used to work two jobs and he was bicycling to these jobs, a bike at one point. Yeah, a bike. He just sat down and talked to me. And guess what? It clicked. Yeah. It's crazy how, this is a good point. Mary Poppins being a really, it's not just a classic, it is the better live action kids movie. This is to show you how,
to say the least.
Well, this is to show you how kids are smarter than you think. Don't treat them like idiots. Look at the Mary Poppins script. Look at the Minecraft script.
Yeah.
One is treating kids like idiots.
Well, one is a movie made to just keep the kids quiet for 90 minutes.
Yes, it's literally that.
And the other movie is actually trying to engage with kids on an emotional level and does something and does kind of the daring thing where, like, all of a sudden the movie, like, makes you go, actually, this is about the dad. It's not about the kids. It sucks you in thinking, like, oh, it's about...
Well, because you got the dancing penguins and shit.
Yeah, yeah. It's about the kids, and the kids are like me because I'm a kid. Like, oh, this is about dad. Oh, I should learn to appreciate what my parents do for me. But even aside all of that, just the scene where he's like, he thinks his life is over,
yeah,
and he's doing that long walk, and he's not walking. Something else I realize is, like, you know, throughout the movie, he, like, walks with purpose. Like, his blocking is always motivated, but when he's walking to the bank, he's slow. He there's a little flutter to his step, like he's taking his time because he doesn't want to go where he needs to go. I, as a kid, first watching that, I wouldn't be able to articulate all of this as I am now. But my brain knows what's happening.
Your emotions are what's doing the communication.
And I feel for him at that scene. And I've always have.
Well, the famous saying, I don't know who said, I forget who says it. It could have been Dr. Seuss for all I know. Or someone who was heavily involved in kids entertainment, is the best kids stories are not made for kids. Mm-hmm. That is like the gold standard of, like, if you're going to make a kids movie, you're not making it for the children. And it's like, think of, like, back then, this is a great quick segue before we talk about Superman, of other kids movies that live action and animated. It's like, look, remember Ferngully, how intense that first one was? Like holy shit, like, this fucking evil entity was going to consume the planet. Okay, the Musketeers, Disney's Musketeers with Kiefer Sutherland, Charlie Sheen, and Oliver Platt. Like, damn it, like, oh my God, France is going to fall.
Yeah.
Like, people were dying, and, like, the Musketeers rallied together, and then you thought Aramis was dead.
I think about, you know, it occurred to me I guess the conclusion with Minecraft, I would say it's like the movie made $1 billion.
Which is sad. Which is, you know what?
Well, here it's like it made $1 billion because of the Minecraft name. And therefore, and which is what the studio was betting on. Hey, it's going to have Minecraft on it. Minecraft's really popular. This is going to make a lot of money. If you know that going in, why not just make a good movie anyway?
You know, especially with the cast you have. That's a good cast they have.
The prompt was make a movie based off Minecraft. They could have done anything. They could have made an animated movie. I think that would have been the better choice.
But I'll give them this. The CGI was phenomenal. Watching it on the big... You've seen my dad's new big TV?
Yeah.
That CGI... The way the zombies look, the CGI, it was great.
Yeah.
But that's all they had.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of special effects for a movie that a kid is not going to remember in 2 weeks' time. So unless they're already into Minecraft, and there's other aspects of the movie where I'm like, I feel like I would appreciate this more if I played Minecraft, but I feel kind of alienated.
I'll tell you
right
this,
now.
I played it, and I'm just like this. All right, I understand those tools. All right, I get that.
It's the thing! Oh, it's that thing!
The thing that really took me out for sure was the mariachi part. I don't know if you remember that, when they try to sneak into the house and they both are mariachi.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck is this shit? The Ender was actually scary. That was cool. That was it.
If the IP is going to make you the money and not this, and not the movie, not the actors, not the story itself, the IP is going to draw the most people in, just why not make the movie good? Or at least try to make the movie good, okay, that's not really fair. I'm sure the filmmakers in their mind thought they were trying to make the best movie possible. Why just make something that respects your audience, even if your audience is 9-year-olds.
I told Brittany that when I was watching the movie. I've watched it a couple times because my oldest was like, hey, can we watch it? I'm like, I'm not going to say no, whatever. I'm watching it, I'm like this, oh, I can write a better movie. It should have been the Lego concept of...
Yes.
Yeah, like you know what I'm talking about.
I wanted to watch the Lego
no,
movie.
No, but that should have been the concept where Jack Black's character got stuck there, the Peter Pan mentality. Jason Momoa wish, because his character wanted the past, and these kids show them, like, you can have both. You can be an adult and enjoy kid things. Just balance it out, fucker.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been better. Obviously, some people needed to die in the big battle, but that will never happen in a kid's movie again. No one dies in kids' movies anymore.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not true. People do die in kids' movies. Uncle Aaron getting murked in Into the Spider-Verse.
I don't see that as a kid's movie because it's so good. See? But you get what I mean, though. Like, a live-action kid's movie, people did die, you know, back then. I mean, shit, remember Simon Birch?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, the mom dying?
Yeah.
I cried.
Yeah.
So before we go to Superman, basically, Minecraft is just a shut the kids up for 90 minutes film. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Even though they have like a great soundtrack where I'm like, oh, why are these good songs in here? Hey, at least Jack Black and Jason Momoa is 69. All right, let's talk about the Man of Steel.
Now, obviously, I think you know that I watched it a fourth time. The fourth time I've watched it was last night. I was actually at my parents' house because my dad actually just got out of surgery.
So you good?
Yeah, no, everything's doing fine. We'll talk about it
okay.
Off the mic.
Don't scare me like that then.
Okay.
God damn, give me a heart attack.
So like I visited, yeah, so I was just, my wife and I were visiting them just to make sure everything was okay. My dad looked pretty good.
Was that their first time? Was that their first time watching Superman?
Yes, they hadn't watched it before, okay. So we showed it, and they had a freaking blast.
Good for you four. Good for you four.
Like my dad, like it wasn't just oh that was a good movie. My dad was like, dude, this James Gunn guy is a freaking genius. Like he was saying that to me. They just started watching Peacemaker too, so they're kind of like
best line of that first season. Yep, I knew it. Project Butterfly. great. It's like, what a callback from the movie, though. Like, you know, like, starfish. Did that actually do with a butthole or a real starfish? Butterfly. Is it a real butterfly? Well, we battled a big-ass giant starfish, so does the butterfly mean butterfly? Tell me!
But I understand, Tom, that you were less than enthused with the movie.
Fucking hated every second of it. Except for the Lex Luthor parts. I will give you that. Okay. Nicholas Holt killed it as Lex Luthor.
Yes.
First of all, okay. I didn't like the movie at all, but I loved Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor, because I swear to God, every time I was watching Nicholas Holt on screen, I'm like this, fuck, I'm getting Superman Return vibes here, like he's saving this movie.
I mean, isn't he like just the most petulant hater ever?
He's a great hater. I wish they went a little bit more into like the concept of this, basically nationalism hate he had, but oh my God, I loved how he was really a good boss to a degree.
He's like rubbing their shoulders in the control.
He's like this, but not in a creepy way. He's like this, you got this. You got this. Like, yeah. We can do this.
It's very bro-y.
He's such a hype man. And
you get the sense that all of Luther Corp's employees are paid very well and they got some good insurance.
There's some moments where he treats people like shit. Remember when he knocks over the coffee cup twice?
Yeah.
Like, it's like this, but the boss is having a bad day. I've gone through that with all of my jobs in my career, so I let that slide.
Yeah.
Yes. He treated one ex horribly, but I'm like, well, that's not business, so that's personal, so it's separate. He just turned that one girl into the engineer, but I'm like, yeah, but he didn't force you.
And a couple of times he calls her by his like her first name, and like when she gets knocked out at the end, like he goes, Angela, no! Like he actually seems genuinely worried for her.
But he's like a boss where it's like this. I wouldn't mind working for him. Obviously, he pays and treats. Look at I don't know who the extra's name is, but the little more heavier set black guy.
Oh yeah, it's Otis. It's the Ned Beatty character from the original, from the 78 Superman. It's the same character in name only. Obviously, their personnel.
But that's that actor who was like in the control room with Lex.
That's who he's playing. He's playing Otis.
But what I'm saying is, you could tell that guy is like a career man.
Yeah.
And people like if Lex says something, I might question it. But if he says something, okay, no, he knows Lex the longest. Like we're
he's the skipper,
literally. Mm-hmm. Him and then so Nicholas Holt's every scene killed it. Awesome.
He's a great Lex. Like it's the they finally. It's only now they're finally doing Tycoon Lex in live action and movies and just. Fucking nailed it right there.
They've done Tycoon Lex. They're just finally getting it better.
Well, yeah, they're doing it right. Yeah.
I do not like, though, how, again, it's like Superman Returns and the first Superman. It's like, damn, Lex, there's more to life than real estate schemes. I'm sorry. Like, I want half of this country, and I'm going to get half of it from my utopia.
There is more to life. It's more to life. It's all about killing Superman.
I know, but like, damn, like, Lex is all about retail schemes. I'm like, real estate schemes. I'm like, there's more to the villainy. The other only character that I liked was who stole the show, and he was, I don't know the actor's name, but he was in X-Men Days of Future Past. No, X-Men First Class. Mr. Terrific was fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah. Edie Gathegi.
I wanted a Mr. Terrific movie because I love that. I'm goddamn Mr. Terrific. You brought that damn dog!
I love when Superman's like, I'm trying to figure out how to get the monster out of here alive, and he just rolls his eyes. He's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, come on.
Just kill the fucking thing.
He was so...
He's so fucking great in that movie.
Oh, like, he was perfect because it's like, you know, like, motherfucker, I will kick your ass! I'm goddamn Mr. Terrific.
I love someone joke that, like, it was really a Mr. Terrific movie with Superman as the special...
Yeah, really, because he stole the movie. Him and Lex stole it. Mr. Terrific was great. I like that. Really? You couldn't figure out a faster garage? I haven't gotten to that yet, all right? Like, back off, lady. Lady, back off.
Circles. They're called T-spheres.
You know he wanted to say, they're called T-spheres, bitch.
Those are not cheap, dog.
When he saw the dog look at him, he's like, oh, shit.
Oh, no. No. And the dog's like, ball.
And here's the thing, folks. For the past, I think, 5 minutes, you've been hearing me gleefully talking about two characters because that's all I liked. Fuck this movie.
Okay, all right. I have... When you said you didn't like it, we didn't talk too much about it because I wanted to save it for the show. I'm guessing three things you didn't like. One, the kind of lack of stoicism in this particular version of Superman.
More maturity than stoicism. God, he's a whiny bitch.
You know what he is? I think Mike Stoklasa put it well, is that he's like an overgrown boy. He has the naive... He has like the naivete and innocence and wholesomeness of a boy. And that turns out to be his... And of course, the movie is like, that's his strength, actually. That's why he is the ultimate good. And that's why he's like... He will save a fucking squirrel from being stepped on.
Is it because he tells all his other coworkers his name?
Why does he trust everyone?
It's like for me, the stoicism, yeah, okay, more maturity. What's the second one?
Okay, the second one, I think it's how they handled Superman's parents.
God! Fuck, I was so pissed. I told my dad, and he was like, that's fucking stupid. That's so fucking stupid.
It does have a precedent in the comics.
I swear to God, though, that killed it for me because I'm like this. I'm like, really? Jor-El's a tyrant? Have a haram of fucking women? Which comic is that in?
I think that was first established in John Byrne's Man of Steel, which is kind of considered a seminal Superman origin story. It was the comic that introduced the idea of Lex Luthor being a rich tycoon type.
Okay.
So that's there. I mean, I think Gunn played it up a lot just for the maximum impact of like Superman realizing that, you know, the arc of realizing I'm not a good person because of what my birth parents wanted me. I'm a good person because I choose to be. And that, so, like, he played it up for that. I was not totally surprised when I saw that because Smallville also played around with that idea that the Kryptonians weren't actually good. They didn't go all the way with that, but but that idea, like, there's a scene in the second season of Smallville where Clark looks at his spaceship and he sees writing on it, and he realizes he can read his own people's writing, and he, like, reads, and when he's with his dad, he's with Pa Kent, and he's like, what does it say, son? He says, I think this says I was sent here to conquer, and he's, like, horrified, and that's, like, a whole thing with Clark of kind of, you know, struggling with what his real destiny is, and so, which, you know, is an arc that permeates throughout that entire series. I'll just say, I feel like James Gunn took a lot of inspiration from Smallville, and David Corenswith took a lot of inspiration from Tom Welling.
Well, I understand the Smallville part. I'll admit, because you know I've talked about this with other comic book films, as long as you can find it in the comics, I'm fine with it, because I believe in that faithfulness.
I mean, if you see anything in a Superman movie now, it's like, oh, I'm sure it's in a comic somewhere.
Well, but if you can, you've told me that the part about Jor-El sending Kal-El to Earth to be a conqueror.
Yeah,
if that's somewhere in the comic books, especially the Man of Steel, when you told me, fine, all right.
Yeah, it's very much like a depend on who's writing.
I hated it just because I'm like, maybe it's because I mostly grew up with the movies, and I'm like this. I'm like, God damn it! Like, Jor-El's like was the only good Kryptonian. Everyone else deserved to die on Krypton. Jor-El being a douchebag, I'm like, ah, fuck this film. And because here's the thing, I love, first of all, that it was Bradley Cooper playing Jor-El. And there's a reason why. Because when it comes to the big screen, not the TV shows or cartoons, but the big screen, mm-hmm. Marlon Brando,
yes,
Russell Crowe, and now Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
Those three men being the son of Kal-El. I just like that.
Or the father of.
Sorry. Gotta mix up. The father of Kal-El. Those three men, phenomenal actors with their careers. Marlon Brando, as we know, is basically the pantheon of acting for everything he's done. Lazy worker, lazy fucking worker, yes. But you cannot deny everything he's done from, you know, On the Waterfront, you know, Streetcar Named Desire, The Wild Bunch, Godfather, and Apocalypse Now. Like, you cannot deny. Yes. So him being Jor-El, even my dad was right. Like, you know, seeing that for the first time, I was like, yo! And me as a kid, I'm like, oh my God, it's Don Corleone!
Yeah.
Then with Man of Steel, which I have my problems with, but the fact that they got Russell Crowe to play Jor-El, I'm mm-hmm. like this, yes! Because the Gladiator!
Yeah.
Because fuck yeah! The Gladiator, man! Maximus!
Yes.
That's all you need for Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper
mm-hmm.
being Jor-El. I'm like, that is awesome because I'm like,
yeah,
I saw him in Hangover, the A-Team, and then what he did with all the David O. Russell films.
Yeah.
He is an actor. And I loved how you finally get to really hear the Kryptonian language. I love that. I like sci-fi films that say, I don't give a fuck, we're speaking alien.
That seems to be like a recent trend with Superman fiction, because the My Adventures of Superman TV show does that too.
It's a recent trend overall with superhero films, and I think Black Panther really pushed it
mm-hmm.
because it's like, no, I want subtitles in my film if it's a non-human,
yes,
freaking species, or non-American, non-American.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, I told you once, I wish Black Panther had the balls to speak only Wakandan mm-hmm. the whole movie.
Yeah.
Just the balls. It's because, one, I love foreign language films. Letters from Iwo Jima is one of my favorite. And then it's like, yeah, here's the Kryptonian language. And I'm like, and they weren't putting subtitles. I'm like, oh, there's a reason. Okay, okay. And I love it's Kryptonian. And that Ukrainian actress, I don't know her name, but she's from Westworld.
The prostitute from Westworld.
And I just didn't like that. It was like, oh, we sent you here to conquer and spread your seed. And I'm like, fuck you, movie. Because I was already hating it.
I sympathize with people having a problem with it. And I don't think your feelings on that are invalid because it had a basis in comics. I don't think they're invalid on there. You know, that's.
But I'll recognize it though. At first, I thought it was James Gunn just pulling it out of his ass. But I'm like, no, fine. I will give it the recognition though that it's comic book accurate. Yeah. So I am wrong in that.
I went along with it because I liked the arc. I was like, oh, okay, they're doing an arc with this. That Superman, it's part of him self-actualizing. And actually, someone actually compared this to the Robert Pattinson Batman movie, which had something similar, where Bruce Wayne realizes that his parents weren't perfect either, and that was part of his arc of self-actualizing. I'm not just committing vengeance. I have to be a good person. I have to actually help people. Yeah. So the similar arc, and then the third thing, I'm just imagining the entire James Gunn tone of it all just didn't sit right with you.
I think it worked with the Justice Gang to a degree because think about this.
Yeah.
Well, because okay, Hawk Girl, as I've known specifically just from the two animated shows, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, that's a girl you don't fuck with. She's just gonna tell you F off. I need my coffee.
Yes,
I love that it's Guy Gardner. So those two would never work. And then you got Mr. Terrific. I'm like, no, those three are just going to be kind of shitting at each other a lot. So I get that. It's just the overall James Gunn-ness I didn't like because, one, you said it perfectly. James Gunn loves his
misfits.
He loves his misfits. Okay, but that's the key word. Misfits.
Mm-hmm.
Guardians of the Galaxy, misfits. Suicide Squad,
all misfits.
The thing about for me, though, when it comes to now the big dogs, Superman, and then still the Justice Gang, what we see, they're not misfits. To me, they're more outcasts, and there's a difference between those two.
Okay.
That's me. Because mm-hmm. Superman, yes, he's accepted onto Earth as one of ours. He is our adoptive son. He is our protector. He is the man.
Yes.
That everyone rallies behind to fight, basically, when it comes down to it, Darkseid. He's more of the outcast at the beginning who it gets accepted. The Green Lantern Corps, the Hawk Girl especially when you know the arc from Justice League.
Yeah.
Hawk Girl is an outcast. She's an alien. Gets accepted in.
Mm-hmm.
It's the difference to me is James Gunn was not writing a bunch of misfits. He was writing a movie full of outcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I didn't like the tone. It fit for some moments.
Okay.
Not all of them. Like, okay, like me. I was laughing at the Mr. Terrific stuff because he's fucking awesome. Yeah. Like, I'm goddamn Mr. Terrific. Yeah. Oh, you brought that damn dog? That's funny. I think Guy Gardner is obviously for the average viewer, he is you like him or don't. I already know from the comics, he's just like, what's that one scene from Young Justice?
Still, we could always use more raw power. And Earth has a third Green Lantern, Guy Gardner.
No.
But we could really.
No.
No, do not let Guy Gardner on the Justice League, please.
So you, and especially when I told you when I read Doomsday Clock, and he's the one who's like, this, I'm just going to sock Dr. Manhattan in the fucking face. It's like, dude, no, like, you're an idiot. So I like how it's older Guy Gardner with the haircut and just being a douche. I'm like,
yeah.
It makes sense. Fine. It's just the tone of it. And then there's the thing I didn't like most overall was just, he just comes off as Superman, Kal-El, comes really off as a whining bitch, especially that first big scene in Lois's apartment when they're doing the interview. I'm like, dude, you've been at the Daily Planet for how many years? You don't know how this works? You don't know how this fucking works?
Well, he never had to. He's always interviewed himself, and he thought like, well, my girlfriend's gonna go easy on me, right?
Lois Lane, that's why you love her, because you're the Man of Steel, but she's the only one who can bust your balls. And I love how he's like, God, you know how much I hate that, Lois. You know how much I hate that. Like, well, sometimes I like to think about like ways I would talk in the interview, so I talk in third person. Really? Really, bro? And it's like,
no, he was woefully unprepared. And then, okay, some of that stuff took a lot of getting used to. The big part I liked was when he just blew up and said, people were going to die. And to me, it was like, that is the ultimate point. the politics of everything doesn't matter. What the immediacy was, one country was going to engage in a genocidal war in another country, and that's all that matters. The nuance and the none of that matter. That was like, I loved when he blew up with that.
I agree with you now, because Zune, you told me when you saw this movie that it's not, it's about just wherever you are in the world, if you have these godlike powers, you're supposed to just do good across the globe. And I agree with you on that.
And it didn't pussy out on that idea. Unlike a movie before then would, but now, no.
Well, and here's the thing. I like that. And I think that's where the stupidity of the whole, you know, with the criticism coming out with this film, like, oh, woke Superman. I'm like, okay, what wokeness are we talking about here? Because as you know, there was some controversy with a Superman film being pitched about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, with Michael B. Jordan being the black Superman. And that raised hell for like a week on the Fox News. It did.
Was that even real?
It was greenlit and then it just got shelved. But that was going to be a thing. By the way, people, in the comic books, there is a fucking black Superman. So yes. Get over it. And like I told with Travis.
There's like a couple of them. Right?
Exactly. Well, there's one for sure.
Is that John Henry Irons, aka?
That's one of them, but the other one. There's another like young male who is Black Superman.
Okay, all right.
And his name is not Clark Kent or Kal-El. He has another name.
Okay,
but the thing is, and I'll say that, like I said with the thing about Jor-El being a tyrant, if it's in the comics, I'm okay with it because that's all I care about really when it comes to literature. Like, just be accurate. So that didn't matter when I started. So when I heard about you saying the controversy of this Superman, James Gunn, being the woke, I'm like, okay, what's woke? And you told me what people are upset about. It's like, it's not anymore about truth, justice, and the American way, the way we heard Christopher Reeve say it.
Yeah.
Nowadays, what it has to be is about truth, justice, and all mankind. And I'm like, That's what Justice League was and JLU was on Toonami.
Yeah.
That is Superman. In the Superman and Lois show, when he saved those North Koreans who were about to die in the submarine, It's like, he just saved lives. Who gives a fuck?
That's what, yeah.
So I love that. And I agree with you on that. If I had the powers of Superman, oh, trust me, my foot would be in a lot of asses to get everyone back on track of good. Because that's what you should be. If you have these powers, one, don't just protect Metropolis. Two, don't just protect Smallville. No. Don't just protect America, protect the fucking globe, dude, because you can be actually at all places at once. Superman is that fast.
Yes.
He can literally be everywhere at once. He has the hearing ability. The Superman and Lois show showed that. He saved the cartel bank, remember?
Yes.
For the tellers. He saved the North Koreans. He saved some people on a bridge. He saved the North. He can be everywhere at once, folks. Shut the fuck up. It's about all mankind. That's how it's supposed to be.
It's called saving the world.
It's called also being Superman, not Super American.
It's called being Superman, not Homelander.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. Hell, even Captain America in Civil War said, well, if there's a situation across the world we need to go to and the government won't let us. Like, I'm Captain America. I'm here to save the world, damn it. That's what Civil War was.
Yeah.
So, no. The thing I didn't like, though, is how he blew up to me was just kid-like. Yes, he blew up saying people are going to die. To me, the Superman, was just this. This is how you say it, like this. Lois, people are going to die. I will go wherever it needs to be. I do not care about the politics. That's how I want it in my head. But he blew up because this movie was about saving people.
I've always had a softer spot for depictions of Superman because I always think, okay, he was raised since he was a baby in Kansas. He was raised among other people, raised as American, and the fact that technically, according to this movie, Superman and I are the same age. This is millennial
Superman.
Late millennial Superman. And so I thought, like, you know, sometimes the Superman being like always giving the most mature and measured response, it's like, okay, that's what he would do, but I always wonder, like, how does he get like that from being raised as like a normal kid in Kansas? Like, is this an act? Is he actually like this? And, you know, I mentioned in a previous episode, I read Superman Birthright, where Mark Waid included this idea that he is acting, that he actually read books on acting. Yeah, he literally has the Stanislavski method.
That makes sense for any superhero.
And it's like, oh, okay. Like, Mark Waid points out, like, oh, no. Like, Superman is a persona that he perfected and modified. And that's one approach. But that's an approach that acknowledges that he would still react to things like the same way
you and I would.
You and I would. And this movie goes in the other direction where it's like, nah, he is just like one of us. He has his emotional failings. And you know, Smallville leans into that. And that show lasted like 10 years, way beyond his teenage years. And like I said, I saw a lot of Tom Welling and David Corenswit performance. I think there's even an interview where he says that, like, when someone asked him your favorite Superman, he said it was Tom Welling. And I thought, oh yeah, that makes sense because he's my age. That would be the Superman he grew up with.
I like, okay, so you're bringing up that this Superman is 30. Let's just say flat 30, maybe 29. This Superman. It's 30. It is 30, actually.
It is 30 because...
Yeah. By the way, the whole 3 thing got annoying, but now I get it because I'm like, oh, the Holy Trinity. And also, too, you know, Superman being the all-American boy, the Father, Son, Holy Spirit thing. I'm like, okay, I get that. It got annoying, but I get it. That little thing, I swear, James Gunn is just like, just the wrong type of humor for this one. But
okay.
I like, though, what you're saying, because a Superman is representing us. Now, yes, every 30-year-old does act differently. Some 30-year-olds are childish. Some are like this, dude, are you 80? What happened to you?
Yeah.
But I guess what you could say, and maybe this is my theory because we don't know yet, it hasn't been announced, one of the movies coming out in this DCU lineup that James Gunn is heading, the next Batman is the Brave and the Bold Batman. And so far from what I'm hearing, the rumors is that the actor to play Bruce Wayne in Batman will be the guy who played Spencer Dunn in 1923's The Yellowstone spinoff.
That is a rumor.
But it makes sense because if this is supposed to be late millennial Superman, but with that boyish, youthful eyes and like, goodness, Boy Scout.
Very, very like Silver Age.
But that makes sense because the actor, from what we've seen just alone from 1923's Yellowstone season 1 and 2 of that Spencer Dutton, that Batman has to work with this Superman has to work with that Batman. And that Batman is maybe a 35-year-old man, but he is a fucking 75-year-old war veteran inside his head. Like when you watch 1923, Spencer Dutton, you're like this, oh, he dropped bodies and he don't give a fuck anymore.
You'll have that contrast.
That dynamic of this, in the Justice League, Superman's the leader. Batman's number 2.
Yeah.
And I've always felt that Bruce Wayne was always older than Kal-El, than Clark Kent.
Yeah.
So that makes more sense if you have this actor with this Superman going up against possibly this actor, this Batman.
And even if it's not that actor for that Batman, it like the contrast between
the two.
Brooding, cynical.
It's almost not even brooding, cynical. It's just like this. I will kill you.
Yeah.
I have no qualms and I know how to and it'll be in seconds.
And Superman is like, I would never want to do that.
Yeah, I know. Like, what?
I love you.
I just want a hug.
I love you. I love it. I mean, even that bit in the end where he like gets back at Lex in the climax and he's like,
that is where you've always been wrong about me, Lex. I'm as human as anyone. I love, I get scared. I wake up every morning and despite not knowing what to do, I put one foot in front of the other and I try to make the best choices I can. I screw up all the time. But that is being human, and that's my greatest strength. And someday, I hope, for the sake of the world, you understand that it's yours too.
In spite of everything, I want you to be good as well.
Utopian Superman.
Utopia. Like, even he feels like there's hope for Lex Luthor. There could be hope for Lex
because
Luthor.
Because I still don't like this movie, I do love how Lex said, oh, shut up!
But then he put one finger on Superman, and then what happens? Krypto!
I didn't like this Krypto, but that's just me because I like to see a dog as with those powers, not a mutt. That's just me. Even though I get, but the dog makes sense when you realize the real owner is Supergirl.
Oh, that hit so hard. I was like, oh, she's that 20-something, kind of a hot mess, but she has a dog.
And the dog's a hot mess.
And the dog is a hot mess just like her. Like,
that's why it made sense at the end. But the overall in the movie, I'm like this, man, where's that fucking Doberman at? I want a dog.
He's just a foster situation. It's not really my dog. He's not even that good of a dog, but that doesn't matter.
What did Alan Tudyk's robot say? It's like this. We try to feed him, but it doesn't care. That we could really care less if the dog lives or dies.
I can only assume they didn't do this because the movie would have gotten an R rating. All that was missing was like poop and pee everywhere at the fortress. Because, no, in real life, you have an untrained rescue or a puppy. That is what's going to happen if you leave him alone at the house for a bit.
Whose owner is a party hardcore foul...
Just irresponsible.
Just an irresponsible 20-year-old girl.
And it's like, you know, I've known girls like that.
Oh, we've all known girls like that. That's why the actress who played it was perfect, because she was like that in House of Dragons.
No, I don't know. Maybe it's because I've grown up with dogs. I got one in the house, and of course he's
Dodger's awesome. First off, sorry,
but he was a problem. He was a bit of a rescue situation, and he was a problem for the first few months. We had to do a lot to get him under control. And then Tater Tot is a puppy. And he just turned one, so obviously when I first watched the movie, I mean, he's better behaved than Crypto is now, but it was like that hit home for me. I was like, yeah, that's what it's like dealing with an untrained dog. So I loved every second Crypto was on screen. It made me so happy. And just, he acted like a dog. He acted like a dog. He didn't act like, it wasn't like Lassie, you know, where Lassie can just understand English and do the exact things you want her to do. No, he was a dog. He was a misbehaving dog. Didn't always listen. But, you know, he'll come through in the end. Especially Superman's little trick up his sleeve where he says, Crypto, get toy. And that...
I'll say one more thing I didn't like. And one thing I actually did care for, I liked.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that we got to finally see the Element Man.
Yeah, Metamorpho, a.k.a. Rex.
I like that. I like how they added the kid element, because my wife literally got emotional because it's a crying baby in the sea of that, the Proton River. But I loved that it was the Element guy, because I'm like, finally. Like, we're getting other heroes. Like, okay.
We're getting the really weird DC characters.
I'm like this. They just need to do two more live-action guys. Booster Gold and Plastic.
Ooh, now we're talking.
I love the...
James Gunn can do Booster Gold. I could totally see that.
The Booster Gold episode from JLU is my favorite because it's like, fuck the crew. Booster Gold is in the background. He actually saved the universe while everyone was shitting on him. And I love that best line from his little sidekick. My God, it's full of stars. I'm like, yes, 2001. No, I love 2000 references. The Space Odyssey. My God, it's full of stars. But the one I think what I didn't like, and maybe this is just me because, again, I think you and I were spoiled with Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. We were spoiled for, like, this is fucking heroes against evil.
Yeah.
This is what heroes are.
Oh, yeah.
Because Guy Gardner, okay, not the betrayal. I love Nathan Fillion. He's great in everything. Halo 3 ODST, Buck all the way, fucking Firefly, everything. Even The Waitress, that musical movie, The Waitress. I love Nathan Fillion, everything he does. Even he's the only reason why I sometimes watch The Rookie. It's just for him. I loved his portrayal. The thing I didn't like was some of the writing. Okay, when the Justice Gang shows up, you hear the anchors say like they are sponsored and funded by whatever.
Lore Tech by James Gunn's brother.
By the way, who he kills in...
His one cameo.
But he kills in the episode of season two of...
Oh, yeah, and his one scene in Peacemaker, yeah.
But what I'm saying is what I didn't like is, okay, he said that, and my instant reaction was, what the fuck? Because it gets brought up more when Guy Gardner questions Kal-El of like, hey, man, you're the reason why I joined the Corps and what I'm supposed to protect the fucking galaxy from. I'm like this. You're the Green Lantern. Why do you need to be funded by a fucking human tech, bro? You have a ring. The ring is your equipment. Why are you being funded when you're part of the core, you jackass?
I don't know. Does the core provide it for his patients?
Yes, because it's the ring. The ring is everything.
Well, yeah, can you make food with the ring?
You can get food. You save the world. You can go get food. But I'm saying is, why are you being supplied, armored, and fun by an American human tech guy when the ring is the only equipment you need if you're a lantern? That's just me. Sorry.
He clearly views himself as like, I should be the leader of the Justice Gang, so it must be more of a vanity thing for him.
I know.
It's fucking Guy Gardner, so.
You bring up the core fucking creed and stuff, and I'm like, motherfucker, then why are you being funded?
Which, like, okay, I know the Green Lantern Corps is real in that universe, especially they're coming out with a new TV show about that. But you do wonder how much of what he says is true. Cause like, as they say, like, anything you don't want to do is like somehow a violation against your oath. Like, you're kind of full of shit, dude. It reminds me of, like, the ultimate Marvel version of Thor, where you're like, does this guy just have a bunch of superpowers and he's a hippie, or is he seriously the son of Odin?
I think for me, and maybe it's because between you and me, you know, I love my superhero movies where at the same time it's like this. It doesn't matter at the same time what you're doing. Vigilantism is fucking illegal, and it's bound to be flawed with whatever you're doing. Superman turned in the comics, for example, and who knows what they'll do with James Gunn's universe. Yeah. Superman becomes a tyrant in the, you know, Injustice Gods Among Us arc. There is a chance that this man turns fucking, you know, fucking leader supreme.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just the tone was probably the overall thing why I didn't like this film, because just I love the Batman. I love the Dark Knight trilogy, and I love Watchmen, and I love Spider-Man 2 with Tobey Maguire. I just love a superhero movie where it's like this. Not only could you die saving the world, but the worst thing that could happen is your soul dies at the end of the day. And that, to me, resonates more for me as a comic book and Superman, a superhero lover, because to me, that's the ultimate battle when fighting evil. It's not that you could die or your loved one could die or the maybe half the population dies. It's, yeah, you won. You beat the bad guy. Good for you. Did you lose your soul, though? Because fuck, man, what are you going to do in the next engagement?
See, to me, this is why Superman, James Gunn's Superman, is like a real superhero movie. It's like a real superhero because the message of the movie is it is not complicated to be a good person. It is not complicated to do good. And you don't have to be naive and childish like Superman is to do that. That's why that's why it's so great that what stops Israel from invading Palestine, I mean Boravia from invading Jamaica, is it's not Superman that does it. It's Green Lantern. The most cynical, it's Green Lantern and Hot Girl and then Metamorpho like tags along. But, you know, but Green Lantern, the most cynical out of all those Justice Gang bastards, he's the one that leads the charge to save the day, to stop the not Israeli invasion of Gaza. Because even his cynical ass could be compelled to do the ultimate good, to be like, you know what? Actually invading a country for a genocidal war, that's kind of bad one way or another. And Superman, and it's like the thing that makes Superman more powerful. It's not the fact that he himself is good or that he has all these great powers. It's that he can inspire other people to do good when he can't. And I thought that was fucking beautiful. Even a cynic can do the ultimate good. You can motivate the most hardened person to do the right thing.
It's like that Lilo and Stitch one. You're supposed to expect me just to help you just like that? Just like that? Eh. All right.
All right. Yeah, exactly.
What did we do now? He is very persuasive. Persuasive?
And to me, that is the mark of like a true superhero. A true superhero and a true superhero movie is like, The point is that they're not going to lose their soul. They're always like that's why we like superheroes in the first place, is like they have all this power and they do the right thing with it. And dear God in heaven, does that resonate in 2025 more than anything right now? All our people in power are evil monsters. Like everybody is. No.
Or lazy.
Or lazy. But they're like, I was going to say everybody is Lex Luthor, but no, like everybody running the world right now is more evil than Lex Luthor.
Everyone wishes they were Lex Luthor because that guy was smart.
Yes.
Dude, 1A. 1A.
1A. 1A. I'm glad you remembered that.
Or put the nanites in his mouth, suffocate him that way. I'm like this. All right, they might kill fucking Superman.
It seems like every powerful person is a supervillain right now. And just the idea that...
And we're talking about the globe. We're not just talking about home.
There's the old phrase, power corrupts, but there's a contrasting idea, which is power reveals.
That's what it is. It's not power corrupts. Power just intensifies what you already are.
Yeah. It's like, which is like part of Superman's arc, which is why him having the terrible parents is important, where he realizes, his dad says, I think it says more what you wanted that message to say rather than what it actually says. You know, he is a good person because he chooses to be one. and him having powers will not corrupt him any way or another, which is why I don't really like, I almost never really like bad Superman arcs, because it, to me, that just kind of makes, to me, evil Superman is almost, especially we've had so many iterations of evil Superman now. Homelander, Omni-Man, of course, the freaking Injustice bullshit, which is so popular.
Yeah, the video game's good. Those are two good video games.
Well, yeah, but they're fighting games, right? They're
It's not fighting. It's literally just Mortal Kombat, we're buff.
The whole point of those games is just, these superheroes fight each other, but they created this elaborate, grim, dark lore, like, what if all your superheroes turn bad? And it's like, that's not interesting to me. Superman's actually more interesting if you do the whole, I am always good. I will always be a good person and do the right thing, and you can too. That's a much more interesting character to me.
I always like, personally for me, I enjoyed the evil Superman arcs because, one, I like that the fact it only happened because the Joker got bored of Batman and always losing to him. So he said, fuck it. I've been playing this whole game on hard difficulty, on legendary. I'm going to play it on easy for once just so I can have a breather. And I love that that's the only reason why the Joker attacked Superman by killing Lois and the unborn child, because he just said, Batman, I've been fighting you on legendary my whole career. I wanted to play on easy just for once. And it was like beating a baby with a puppy. And I fucking enjoyed it. I'm like, fuck yeah, I love that. I just like that. I'm like, that's the Joker. Just to show you how genius the Joker is. And the duality between Batman and Superman.
To me, the thing that makes Superman interesting and why he's so appealing is that he is like legit incorruptible. I think that's like his true superpower.
Well, he's incorruptible because of who he was raised by, which shows you your parents mm-hmm. are your foundation, which why
yeah.
I'm hoping one day we get a live action Red Sun. That is my favorite. That is my favorite Superman comic, is Red Sun. So it just shows you, maybe, because you know what's interesting? The day we're recording, folks, is on, because I don't know when this is coming out.
This is coming out the end of October.
Okay, perfect. So we're recording on September 23rd, and we just came out with our Hope episode.
Yeah.
And I love that because we talked about parents real quick, and I'm like, it just shows you that your parents are the pillars, the bedrock from which you raise up from and build yeah. as an individual. Because if you look at every superhero, Batman, well, he lost his parents, but he remembered his dad's goodness.
Yeah.
Peter lost Ben at the wrong time,
mm-hmm.
but he still held on to some degree. Dr. Manhattan, his dad was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And that's why Adrian won in Watchmen, is because Dr. Manhattan gave up saying, like, I don't give a shit about these people. I'm done with you and your lies. It's like, yeah, because your father was a cocksucker, which is just the overallness of kind of what you're saying about the incorruptibleness of Clark Kent and Kal-El. It's his parents. Pa Kent and Ma Kent are the ones who should have had 16 kids.
I also just love the casting for Pa Kent and Ma Kent. They're like no-name actors. They both have these thick Midwestern accents. They look like your average Midwestern middle-aged
girl. Oh, they're struggling with the TV. I mean, remember that she called the TV the box?
They called the TV the box. She's speaking close to the speakerphone, even though she doesn't have to. Like, Clark! She's leaning down at the phone. Clark, we read your article.
And the dad is literally working on something like, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, yeah.
Don't be a stranger, son.
One thing I'll say about the other cast of characters, Jimmy, dude. Jimmy Olsen was pissing me off that whole movie. Dude, the girl is so, first of all, she is drop dead gorgeous. She keeps herself clean, put together, and she's into you.
But you can see, like, okay, no. She's a little goofy.
No, dude. She is into you. She keeps herself clean. She is smart, because the selfie thing is an ingenious way.
Yes.
She was a genius. Even she came off as an airhead, but she's an actual smart chick. And she's hot. Dude, just dump your seed into her. Fuck, man. Get her pregnant and move on. Like, she's amazing. Why are you like, oh, God, I don't really want to hang out the weekend with her. Dude, I would have got her knocked up day one.
She's a little goofy. Yeah. She's a little crazy.
Plant your seed in that girl and stop bitching. It's like when you finally watch it, end of watch, the whole concept that Michael Peña tells Jake Gyllenhaal character is like, dude, Just find a chick who's into you, can kind of cook, wants to fuck you, and won't cheat on you behind your back.
Well, okay. As someone who's had a crazy ex-girlfriend in high school,
I've had some.
I'm just saying, I kind of sympathize with Jimmy there. I get what he's going through. It's still really funny.
Just knock her up, dude. Get her fat. Just get her fat with your seed. God damn. Yeah. Fuck, dude. Yeah. I love seeing, and I love who played oh god, who's the editor chief
Oh yeah, Wendell Pierce plays Perry White, Detective Bunk Moreland from The Wire.
Every time he was talking with a cigar in his mouth the whole time, you know all I could
he should always have a cigar in his mouth in everything he's in.
What I was thinking in my head the entire time he had the cigar, every scene he had, because he was the cigar in his mouth while he was giving out orders and talking, the only thing I could think of was, damn it, God, burn everything, it all smells like her pussy, can't go home. Damn, Ty smells like pussy. My jacket smells like pussy. Fuck, I smell like pussy. Where's the match at? That's all I could think about from The Wire was that. That's all I could think about. I was like, my goddamn Ty smells like her pussy.
And it was like the end. This is another trope that the movie pointed out. The black person always knows. Where at the end, he's like, how long have they been hooking up? Oh, I think about 3 months. It's like, oh, Perry knows. Perry knows everything.
Well, you have to be if you're the freaking, you know, if you run the Daily Planet.
Yeah. Well, no, he's the detective that solved a murder with his partner by just saying the F word all the time.
You actually have to be that smart if one of your main journalists is Lois Lane. Like, you have to be better than her.
Yes. Yes, yes, you do.
Because she could take your job. Lois Lane could take your job. That's the thing about Perry. You got to be better than her. For those of you who like it, enjoy it. I just wasn't a fan. I liked certain moments. Let's see what James Gunn does for this whole arc in universe he's building.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, it is definitely not... It was definitely not what I would have thought is like a traditional Superman. This is not the traditional approach. But I like what he's doing. I like what he's doing. I like the themes he's playing with. I'm gonna go with this. I'm going along with this. This is nice. And you know what? Just the emphasis on all life is precious. It is not complicated to be a good person, and anyone can be a good person. That hit fucking hard with me.
All life is precious, no matter your nationality or how you pray,
including animals. That's why, like, the evacuation scene, they made it clear, like, everybody's leaving with their pets, including the old lady with her turtles. Like, those turtles, like, okay. It didn't hit me at first, but it's like, okay, James Gunn's going for, like, even animals are important. That's why Superman saves the squirrel.
Ever since Man of Steel, when people question, like, fucking 9/11 times 100 just happened. Every superhero movie after that has made a point to say, oh, the island's clear, or evacuate everyone, or save everyone.
I think the word hero is important.
Man of Steel really made you go like this. Why is everyone cheering? Like, Metropolis is an ash.
Yeah.
And then what happened during Batman versus Superman? It's a desolate island. It's fine. Like, no one's the island's vacated. And then Age of Ultron? Save everyone. Get everyone out. Get everyone out. Get everyone out. Remember Captain America? The last one on board turned around and just made sure. Did we get everyone?
Yes.
A dog got saved.
Mm-hmm.
And then now with Superman, it showed everyone, even though Metropolis almost had basically had its 9/11 times 100, everyone was gone, though. Doesn't matter.
They got everyone out, as many as they could. And
even though the city really is in ruin, not as bad, it was. Everyone's got out. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I'll give it that. It's interesting how Man of Steel really made every superhero movie say, no, 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 we're saving everyone. We're going to show you we're saving everyone.
It really showed that, like, people don't watch these movies for the destruction. Here's what I say. You know, like, what the tagline of the Superman 78 poster is, you'll believe a man can fly.
Yeah.
So it's like, in 1978, you'll believe a man can fly. In 2013, you'll believe a man could be strong. And in 2025, you'll believe a man can be good.
When did Superman Returns comes out? Was that 07?
06. Do we count that?
There's a joke. In 06, you won't believe how boring this fucker is. That's a Kevin Smith joke. But no, you're right. It's changed where you'll believe in the impossible. You believe in the brawn. Yeah. And now you believe in just the spirit. I understand why you like it too a lot because of the day and age we're in where it's all about basically like this. And I'm because I brought up 2001. 2001 A Space Odyssey was supposed to happen 2001. All that tech, all, and it wasn't about, you know, like, oh, the monolith and Hal killing people. No, no. The tech, the unity of the world, and how we brought up in our first episode about borders, like, by this time, it should have been like the sci-fi books from the 30s and 40s and 50s where we found a way to finally work together while still praying differently, while still looking differently, while still fucking differently, and voting differently, but we found a way for the globe to unite as one singular whole. Because the point is, now we can look to the stars.
Yes.
And that's what this Superman, I will agree with you, is doing. I'm going to save anyone. There's kids who are about to get rolled over by tanks.
Mm-hmm.
He's a kid. I'm going to save him. I don't give a fuck what his banner flag is.
Damn right. Yeah.
Oh, no. He prays to a certain degree at every time at 5 p.m., you know, facing Mick.
Oh, no. He's brown.
That's why I will disagree with all the critics about, like, oh, woke Superman. I'm like, this isn't woke. I grew up with this with Toonami.
Yeah. This is true Superman.
And for people to say, like, well, I like my Superman when it was truth, justice, and the American way. I'm like, the American way is to protect all. Give me your tired, your hungry, and your poor, and your huddled masses.
You know, like, when they say truth, justice, and the American way in the 78 Superman, it's treated as, like, a joke.
Yes. I'm here to fight for truth and justice in the American way.
You're gonna end up fighting every elected official in this country.
Sure you don't really mean that, Lois.
Like, it's treated as a joke. So even in 78, the whole, like, American way thing was kind of like, you know, like, oh, that's kind of silly. Like, right? You know, it shouldn't just be...
It should start off like that, too. But it can start off like that to give you the foothold to be the hero. At the end, it has to be more. Yeah. Well, kind of like when you brought up the Batman with Robert Pattinson. I started off with vengeance. Was, yeah, I know. Some of these people need to be beaten the fuck out. But then he realized, I have to be hope.
Because I set a bad example. I was not sending the right message.
And also, too, he knows vigilantism is destined to fail, so I have to be hopeful until that time comes where, like Watchmen, they got outlawed with the Keen Act.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just me why I didn't like this one Superman, because I love Watchmen so much. I just like that where it's like, well, think about Watchmen. The villain wants to save the world.
Yeah.
The good guy was the comedian, you know, the poster child, and he was raping and killing. But the villain was Adrian, but he's the hero because he was trying to save in the greater scheme.
I've had enough of dark superhero subversions. I'm kind of done with that. Watchmen was like the first thing to really do it. And then we've seen other versions of that with mainly The Boys and Invincible. And Zack Snyder doing it the worst out of all of them with his DC heroes. It's like, no. I just want to see a celebration of people doing good. I think that this postmodernist thinking of, like, everybody has, like, and, you know, everyone edge, moral relativism, and all that. We need to, like, move past that stage now. And we need to go, no, you can still be a good person. You can still do the ultimate good.
Just be a good person. And by the way, though, that movie, 615 mil so far. The year has not ended for 2025. So it's interesting how Minecraft is over $1 billion. It's over. It's going to keep making money. It's just a powerhouse juggernaut.
Yeah.
And Superman, 615. That kind of just shows you the state of where American cinema is. Because when watching Minecraft, I said to my dad, no, I'm not ashamed to be an American because of this bullshit we see in the news and that bullshit we see in the news. That this movie being this successful makes me sad to be an American right now.
And I hope for Warner Brothers that six Warner/DC Studio. Well, DC Studios is what they're
doing this DC, this new universe.
Yeah, cause like they don't even have the Warner Brothers logo on anymore. It's just, oh no, this is a DC production. So like, kind of like what Marvel did, like Marvel doesn't have the Disney logo on anything. It's
hopefully
just,
James Gunn can finish this out just so we can see the overall scheme, because isn't Warner Brothers possibly going to get bought? I heard that.
Yeah. I've heard that like Paramount's trying to see about buying Warner Brothers. I've heard Netflix wants to buy Warner Brothers.
It's like Skydance. I saw Skydance was trying to.
Yeah. Paramount Skydance. Yeah. And like, meanwhile, Warner Brothers wanted to split itself in half, but you have these other conglomerates. I don't know. John Lover has seen so many corporate owners since he's been doing that show.
That's why he looks like he does at that age.
So many business daddies.
To wrap it up, because we talked about movies, I thought it'd be fun to finish off for the one every episode people get to know us more personally. What's your just two favorite films? Top two. I know there's more. You know my five.
If I have to pick
just two.
It'll probably change by the time this episode comes out, because it's like, what am I feeling? Okay, first two that come to mind: Jurassic Park and Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home.
I like Star Trek IV. Star Trek IV is just good. You can't go wrong with IV. You cannot go wrong with Star Trek IV.
It's still the best out of all of them, and it's the one that is like the least Star Trek looking out of all of them.
Just save the whales. And you can't go wrong with the first Jurassic Park.
No.
I recommend everyone read the book. For sure. Yeah. But the first one, you cannot go wrong with that roller coaster ride of like, what?
Now, that first movie is perfect.
I love the Hunter. The Hunter is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I love the Hunter. And that one and Lost World, those two are my favorite act. For me, it has stayed the same for probably almost 15 years. I have my five, but I'll just do my two. And they've stayed the same. My favorite movie of all time, and you know what it is because we played it at my bachelor party.
Oh, yeah.
It's Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
Always have been, always will be, since I saw that after sixth grade. The local video store, JR Rentals in Cyprus, went out, and I bought their copy. It was used, too. Bought their copy of Saving Private Ryan. I've always wanted to watch that movie. When I heard about it, people did not summarize it or promote it right. When you hear people talk about it, it made it sound like a stupid SEALs movie, that one that Charlie Sheen done, like just over the top, whatever. That's how people talked. Really, it sounded like it. Sat down and watched it, and I've never, to this fucking day still, this movie came out in 1998. It should have beat Shakespeare in Love, and I'll fight that to the death. Fuck you.
For best picture at the Oscars.
I don't even know his name. The Weinstein guy. I don't know why I can't say his name.
Harvey Weinstein.
Fuck you, Harvey Weinstein,
yeah,
for underselling that movie by saying, oh, the first 28 minutes is great, but after that, it's a dud. I'm like, fuck you, dude, for saying that. Fuck you for politically destroying that film because of what it did for veterans and fathers and sons. But that's still, to this day, the most beautiful thing I've ever seen on screen. I've never seen anything more beautiful than that movie. Everything from the horror to the humor to the cameos. Paul Giamatti had me in stitches, ankles like an old woman. Oh my God, kills me. Kills me to this day.
One of Spielberg's finest.
It is I don't think it's the greatest film ever made. I think it's the top 10, but it's my favorite movie of all time because I've never seen anything more beautiful in my life to this day on screen. Mm-hmm. My second favorite movie.
Yeah, what comes close? What's the closest to Saving Private Ryan?
Reservoir Dogs, baby. Okay.
All right, that's good. I will never listen to Stuck in the Middle with You the same way ever again. I always think of that one scene.
The little dance, too, and he does with his hips. You know. Yeah. My mom said when that came out originally, it actually destroyed the song for the whole country. No one could ever hear that.
I can't.
I love it. But I love Reservoir Dogs because, and we talked about this in a previous episode, because you said this is coming out in late October. So a previous episode, we were talking about how at Target, we always saw the videos next to the registers.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I saw the anniversary edition of Reservoir Dogs, the 10-year one, on DVD, not Blu-ray, DVD. By the way, the only way to watch Saving Private Ryan is DVD, not Blu-ray.
Why is that? Why?
It's that gritty fucking look.
It looks too clean in 4K.
Remember we watched it on Blu-ray at our school in the PAC. A little special viewing we had. We were able just to watch Saving Private Ryan at school once. And it was on Blu-ray. And I was like this, oh God, I hate this. Because one, it was the clean cutness. Because when you watch it on DVD for Saving Private Ryan and Reservoir Dogs, it's that just like, this is real. This is fucking real. This isn't hyped up. This isn't fun. We're not trying to hear to tell you this grand old fun story. It's like, men are dying. There's like the guy screaming, "Mama, mommy!" Like watching that on DVD, like it's like this was what our grandfathers did. Yeah. In the sake of freedom.
But you just you thought that
the Blu-ray version just took away the honor. It took away the tribute. Just looked too disgustingly good, clean. Saving Private Ryan and Reservoir Dogs need to be watched on DVD. I saw that DVD for Reservoir Dogs so much at Target that when Circuit City went out of business, just bought it. And I sat down and watched it. That opening scene about tipping, because my dad was a waiter for a few years, had me dying. I don't tip. What do you mean you don't tip? I don't tip. And then obviously the whole, it's a bottle episode movie.
Yeah.
And then just the finale, everything about it, the torturing of the cop, the conversations about, you know, like, who's the rat? What do we do? You know, what was it? If you kids don't stop playing nice, someone's going to start crying.
One genre of YouTube video I like is when people who do like a job depict how their job is depicted in the movie. And so when it's like an undercover cop, they'll always show that clip of, Tim Roth, like, preparing to go undercover.
Yeah.
And then his like contact guy is like, you know, it's like, this is like acting. You're an actor. You got to think of it like every time that they show that clip in those videos, the actual undercover cops watching it goes, no, that's not how that is. You're not acting. You're being yourself. Most of who you are is just yourself. You're often using your real name too. Like, and that's just to keep that shit consistent, because if you're just making up a whole bunch of shit about yourself, you're going to screw up. Like, you're not an actor. You're just being yourself. You don't want to draw attention to yourself.
I love how, and also Reservoir Dogs ends. Remember? Mm-hmm. I'm a cop. Like, after they get shot, I'm a cop. And Mr. White's like, and he just puts the gun. The best part is he doesn't place the gun in Mr. Orange's head. He just starts burying it into his skull while crying, and then he just blows him up, and then the cops just...
It's a very ambiguous ending. Like, you don't know who exactly got shot.
Well, they all died except for Mr. Pink.
Yeah.
Depending. Apparently, if you have headphones on and you listen to the last 2 minutes, you hear Mr. Pink being arrested.
Oh, okay.
They played out a scene outside. And by the way, Reservoir Dogs... there's a video game for the PS2 and Xbox. I recommend everyone try to find it. It is an amazing, well-done movie spin-off video game. I am not joking with you.
In a sea of really bad movie tie-in games.
It's so good. That video game, you actually have to think. You actually have to play that game and be paying attention. So good. Yeah, okay, so those are our two favorite movies, folks. This wraps up our... Just fun video talking
another,
about...
Is this a fuck it episode?
No, because we've both seen it.
Okay, all right. That's fair.
This is more just like a interesting kind of like piggybacking off of Sinners, because it's just interesting to see where American cinema is right now.
Yeah.
We have a billion-dollar movie. Okay, Avatar, Titanic, and one of the Avengers movies.
A couple of the Avengers movies, yeah.
Billion-dollar movies, but they're like, they're solid. They're solid, right?
Yeah.
This one, it's like, wow, you just really want your kid to be distracted and just not talk. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie sucked. And then this superhero movie, it's just about being good, and that's all you need. That's really all you need. Just be good and uncorruptible, and it can happen. It is possible for the sake of this species.
Yeah.
Because that's how the mentality at this point in our species history right now, folks, should be about the species, not about individual countries, individual states, individual ideologies. It should be about the species as a whole. Doesn't matter how you pray, doesn't matter how you look, matter how you dress, and matter who you have sex with. But what did I say? I think, I forget what episode I said this. I don't care who you have sex with, as long as it's consensual and not a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care anything else, but just pay your taxes, get some kind of job. It's that simple to be a human.
Yeah.
Don't touch kids. Don't be an asshole. Pay your taxes. Get some occupation. Four things. Not that hard.
That's it.
That was fun. Did you have fun? I had fun. This was a fun one. I hated both movies, but I had fun.
I don't have an issue for the reasons you didn't like Superman. I kind of called it, maybe it's just because I know you so well. I just kind of called it from the get-go. Like, I know what his problems were, and they're like problems where I'm like, I understand why like other people might have had issues with this.
Well, you know what my favorite superhero movie is? It's Watchmen.
Which I don't think is it's not a real superhero movie. It's a comic book movie, but it's not really.
And remember, my second one is Robert Pattinson's The Batman. That's my favorite Batman movie. So it just tells you, you know me, and I knew why you liked it.
That is a superhero movie. I will give you that.
Open your eyes!
All right. Are we done?
We're done. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Thanks, everybody. Bye!